Welcome to Parents Perspective. Mrs. Warren, could you come into Dr. Simon's office, please? The receptionist called into the waiting room. 15-year-old Becky was still in the examining room. Her mom was surprised. She had thought Becky just needed her pre-camp physical. Sighing, she scooped up her purse and newspaper and followed the nurse to the doctor's private office. Dr. Simon came in, his brow furrowed. Mrs. Warren, have you noticed Becky behaving unusually in the past few months? Leaving the table right after meals, perhaps, maybe for trips to the bathroom? Gee, her mom muttered. The kids always rush from the table when they're done. They always have something going on. Well, I'm really concerned about Becky, Dr. Simon continued. She seems to have lost a lot of weight, and she tells me she hasn't had her period for the past 3 months. I think she might have an eating disorder. Mrs. Warren's heart sank to her shoes. Becky had been edgy recently and seemed to be slimming down, but she thought her daughter was just watching her weight. Now it seemed like everything and nothing made sense. From a parent's perspective, what should we know about eating disorders? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest will help us understand eating disorders and what we can do about them. Dr. Randy Wortman is a clinical psychologist in Bethesda, Maryland, who serves as an outreach coordinator for the organization Eating Disorders Awareness and Prevention. In addition to her clinical practice, she talks with middle school and high school students about eating disorders. Dr. Wortman also does telephone conferences for people wanting information and support for positive body image for themselves and their children. She has a daughter in middle school. Welcome to Parents Perspective, Dr. Wortman.
Thank you.
What are eating disorders?
Eating disorders are psychological problems, really, that have both disordered eating behaviors and problems with body image. Usually the underlying problems are emotional problems, and the behaviors are being adopted to deal with difficult feelings. There are also disorders that have come out of our culture, which is a major impetus for the rise of eating disorders today.
Can you explain that? What comes out of our culture? That seems like a pretty tall order.
Well, our culture has a very big drive for thinness. We see it on magazines and how models these days are 25% thinner than models in the days of Marilyn Monroe and Jane Mansfield. And the thinness is the ideal, unattainable standard of beauty for women and for boys and men at this point as well.
That's interesting, because you would think in this era of sort of widened opportunities for women and for men that we would have more selections of what we would like to look like.
Not just what we'd like to look like, but what it's okay to look like.
Yeah.
If you look at the Rockettes from the Radio City Music Hall pictures, the girls today would look at them and say, oh, I don't want to be that fat. They have fat thighs. So the standard is so much thinner today for the actual perfect body. We have made progress in opening up the range of body types and body sizes that are acceptable for magazines and for ads and for stars on TV. However, the girl who's looking at those know that the real ideal is still to be thin. We have people in advertising who are actually trying to make a difference. For instance, Kellogg's cereal now, they talk about it's what's inside that counts. And that's a phrase, by the way, that EDAP, our organization that I work with, coined. It's what's inside that counts. Jergens lotion has also that theme going on. Nike has an ad for a basketball player named Sean Staley, and it says something like, when what matters is the size of your passion, everything about her is outsized, her heart, her creativity, her appetite for the game. Now that's in 17 magazine. When I talk about how the culture promotes this disease, inadvertently or outright, there was a billboard on the interstates out in North Dakota, I think it was, that said, "Cute Anorexic Chicks." And the three main stars of the TV show called Friends were portrayed in this billboard with this sign that said "Cute Anorexic Chicks" underneath it. And it sends a deadly message that physical and mental illness of eating disorders is cute. It also says that starving oneself for beauty and approval is cute. And it also insults people who are suffering with eating disorders. It insults their families, and it insults and hurts women everywhere who are tormenting themselves to have this unattainable beauty ideal. Well, consumers wrote in to the radio station. We at EDAP, Eating Disorders Awareness and Prevention, heard about this and got the billboard taken down. Mm. So when you say, haven't we made progress? Yes, we've made progress because we're taking this billboard down. Yes, we've made progress because we have Mode magazine for a more plus-size woman. Yes, we've made progress because we are having a huge outreach campaign that says you can be beautiful at any size. But how did the ideal become so thin?
Before we go headlong into how our culture got this way, we probably should back up, because there are probably parents who are now wringing their hands going, oh dear, what are the symptoms? What should I be looking for? So maybe we should tackle that head on.
The symptoms of what we call an actual eating disorder, being either anorexia nervosa or bulimia nervosa, are similar. The main symptom is a drive for thinness, a fear of fat, and a fear of being overweight. Well, you could say most people in our culture have that. However, the person who's suffering from the disease will have an actual refusal to maintain their body weight at a normal body weight. Other people can have this drive for thinness and a fear of fat and a fear of being overweight, but they won't, thank goodness, have this refusal to maintain a body weight, which is a normal body weight for their height, for their body type, for their age, and for their activity level. For bulimia, which is a repeated episodes of binging and purging through vomiting, a person will feel out of control during the binge and eat beyond the point of comfortable fullness. And then they will purge after a binge, and it will be self-induced vomiting. They will abuse laxatives. She will use diet pills, diuretics, excessive exercise, or fasting. This is important for parents to understand, because a preoccupation with weight, food, calories, and dieting is normative behavior in our culture. It shouldn't be, but it is.
Especially, I would guess, for adolescents.
Yes, for girls, adolescents, and women. And to the extent that it consistently intrudes on the conversations and interferes with other activities and your sense of self-worth and who you are, that's when you're headed for an eating disorder. You'll notice excessive exercise regimes despite the weather, despite tiredness, despite illness and injury. The need to burn off calories that are taken in is all part of the symptomatology. The person will withdraw from activities because of weight and shape concerns. Expressions of anxiety about being fat, which don't diminish during weight loss. So a person who is extremely thin, who's anorexic, will still tell you that she's fat. She has a distorted image of herself when she looks in the mirror. It's so ingrained in herself, and the sense of control and self-esteem, is lost, and it's gained by being so rigid in food rituals, cutting food a certain way, only eating this amount of food. And by the end, a person cannot notice that they aren't fat. Evidence that you could find as a parent for any of these behaviors would be use of laxatives, wrappers of laxatives or enemas in your child's room, and evidence of binge eating, such as hoarding or stealing food and consuming large amounts of food, and then having the child or your loved one enter the bathroom.
Got to be paying attention to what's going on in your household.
Yes,
and what's in the trash cans.
Yes, you do.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion of eating disorders.
Two excellent books written by hosts Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids, are available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. Today we are talking with Dr. Randy Wortman about eating disorders.
I have heard of parents who, through my own practice, who noticed these things but didn't know what to do. And they'll see the wrappers or they'll see a laxative in their teenager's bathroom cabinet. And the teenager could be 16 or 17 and they don't really have such a good communication, or the child will be very defensive and they don't want to touch the idea. They don't want to confront the child. They hope it isn't happening. And that's what a lot of parents do. They hope that this isn't really a problem.
What should you do if you suspect your child has an eating disorder?
Get help.
How do you do that?
Talk to your pediatrician. Unfortunately, a lot of pediatricians will not understand the beginning of an eating disorder. They'll more likely, like your story, sort of just understand the end of an eating disorder or the end side, where you have lost your ability to menstruate, where you might be growing this little fine hair on your arms. That's kind of an extreme end symptom of anorexia. The reason why pediatricians may not be so aware is that we have a drive to thinness in our health culture as well. We talk about fat is not good. Fat in and of itself can, you know, cause severe illnesses. Well, there are a lot of debates over that at this point, whether you can be fit and overweight at the same time. And there are a number of books and research studies that are showing it's the amount of exercise one gets, it's the amount of healthy eating one does, and it's the amount of fitness level in terms of blood pressure, cholesterol levels, and other internal medical signs that tell you whether you're fit, not whether you have fat on your body or not.
What would be the next step for a parent who's quite frantic at this point?
A person who's quite frantic at this point should actually be in touch with the National Eating Disorders organizations. Our organization, Eating Disorders Awareness and Prevention, the letters called EDAP, E-D-A-P, has a website called www.edap.org.
I want to say that again. Everyone's reaching for pencils right away.
www.e as in eating, D as in disorders, A as in awareness, and P as in prevention, .org. And as a nonprofit organization out in Seattle, and we have treatment referrals all over the country. You can also always go to www.nih.gov and look up eating disorders.
NIH standing for National Institutes of Health.
That's right, .gov.
It sounds like parents need to arm themselves with lots of information, but then also it sounds like if this is a psychological disorder, that the child in question needs to get treated by somebody.
Absolutely.
And so how does a parent find the right somebody?
The right somebody, again, comes from these organizations that have referrals of people who have been trained. There's a wonderful center in Philadelphia called the Renfrew Center. That's R-E-N, F as in Frank, R-E-W. You can call them 1-800-RENFREW or go on their website, renfrew.com. You can also contact my website, www.positivebodyimage.com. All one word, .com, and I have links to these places.
Oh, that's helpful.
I also have a toll-free number in which I welcome calls at 1-888-240-4288.
You want to repeat that?
1-888-240-4288. There are many psychological problems twisted in with an eating disorder, feelings of needing for control. Sometimes we feel that a person who tends toward perfectionism or tends towards an obsessive compulsive type of personality could be more prone to having an eating disorder. But we also see people who have depression and anxiety and who are totally normal and healthy and happy kids who develop an eating disorder. So we're doing some research and showing that genetics may have something to do with it. We don't really know what causes an eating disorder in terms of personality. We do know that some people who have perfectionistic or obsessive compulsive traits will tend towards getting into the food rituals and the restrictive eating disordered behavior. But we also know that people with other kinds of emotional problems, such as depression, not knowing how to deal with their feelings, not having a way to cope with anxiety, can also slip into an eating disorder. And another important point is that anybody can develop an eating disorder. You don't have to have a pathology, a psychological problem, to develop one. At any given point, 20 to 30% of our girls in fourth and fifth grade are concerned about weighing too much. And they're saying that being fat is a problem. We have statistics that can just blow your mind about what kids are doing. At any given time in high school, 40 to 60% of the girls perceive themselves as overweight and are actively trying to lose weight. Now, if you go into high school, you can't see over 60% of the children looking overweight, but that's how they're perceiving themselves.
Dr. Wortman, what are the consequences of the poor nutrition that seems to accompany eating disorders?
A child or an adult will have a reduction in bone density called osteoporosis, which all adults know about, but you probably didn't know that children develop osteoporosis, and it's irreversible. And osteoporosis is a disease that affects your bones, and they'll be brittle, and they'll be dry. And so a child who has anorexia nervosa, who also is developing osteoporosis at the same time, who wants to jump and be in the ballet or be in gymnastics or ice skating or swimming, which are all high-risk sports for developing this eating disorder, are at a high risk for breaking their bones, which is really pretty bad. Another effect of the poor nutrition is muscle loss and muscle weakness. Dehydration can result in the kidney failure, and it also can result in an imbalance in electrolytes. So a person can have a heart attack and die from anorexia nervosa. Anorexia nervosa is a mental illness which has one of the highest rates of mortality of all of our emotional illnesses, including depression, substance abuse, and anxiety problems. Another medical problem is that you will have fine hair that grows all over your body. It grows because the body is trying to keep you warm, because the body is smarter than you are and knows that you're starving to death. You will also develop, a child can, an adult can, an abnormally slow heart rate and low blood pressure, which means that the heart muscle is changing. This is the most severe problem. The risk for heart failure rises as the heart rate and blood pressure levels sink and sink lower and lower.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion of eating disorders.
For an audio cassette copy of Any Parent's Perspective show, send a check or money order for $5 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. Today we are talking with Dr. Randy Wortman about eating disorders.
Now, are the results different when a child or an adult is bulimic?
Yes, there are two major things that happen with a bulimic person. That one of them, from so much vomiting, their enamel in their teeth can wear away, and a person will develop a lot of esophageal reflux and esophagus problems from all the acid and what have you from all that vomiting. Slowing down metabolism was also a problem with the dieting, and there's many things that happen just with what we call dieting. And we say dieting is not bad in our culture, but it is not benign. For instance, I just want to say some of these things that everyone who's dieted knows. You feel faint, you can feel dizzy, you can feel weak, you can have abdominal pains. And you also can risk weight cycling, which can lead to hypertension and long-term kidney damage, and also slowing down of your metabolism, so eventually you feel like you're in a starvation mode. Your body feels like it's in a starvation mode. Even though you're not very thin, your body feels like it's starving, and you will have a lot of trouble burning up any calories after many cycles of just what we call dieting.
now that we're all scared half to death about these kinds of problems, what kind of preventive measures can parents take with their children?
Well, before anything starts, when your child is very, very young, you must consider your own attitudes and your own beliefs towards your own body. And you might not think that's that important, but it is crucial. It only takes one very important person in a child's life that thinks that they should lose a little weight to send someone into dieting, which then may send them into anorexia or bulimia. Talk to your children about genetics. Show them all the different body types in your families before them. If they came over from another country, show them the grandmother who had a big, strong body. Show them people who were of all shapes and sizes in their own family and that you love them just the way they are.
Under what circumstances are boys at risk? We've been talking about girls and how the culture really feeds this image of the nice, svelte-looking female, but it seems that boys also have an area where they're really at risk for this kind of problem.
You're absolutely right. Boys are increasingly at risk for this problem, again, due to the culture. You have Men's Health magazine, that's a new glossy magazine that's out there. All you see in that magazine are pictures of men with no body fat, these washboard abs. Girls do have a harder time because the way our society is set up is that girls are praised for their appearance and boys are in generally praised for their intelligence and what they do, not just how they look. But eating disorders don't discriminate on the basis of gender. Men and boys can and they do develop eating disorders. And you asked, under what circumstances? Athletic activities has the highest correlation with eating disorders. Weight restrictions, weighing kids, coaches who aren't educated in this field of eating disorders will not understand how putting a child on a scale over and over will tell them to lose weight. They will lose weight. They may binge, they may purge, they may spin off into an eating disorder. Track, gymnastics, wrestling, rowing put males at risk. And talking to your boys about the fact that an eating disorder can develop in them or their friends, including the binging and the purging especially, is just as important as talking to your girls. Another factor that spins a boy into an eating disorder and into shame and feeling bad about themselves, which is part of the eating disorder, is teasing. I've treated a number of anorexic men who have not been in the sports situation, but have been teased as little boys for being too fat. And in our society, a little bit of fat is compared with a moral problem. It's compared with being a bad, lazy person. And no child wants to be thought of in that light. So talking about how important it is to not tease children because they have a different body shape than the norm is crucial in preventing, especially for boys and girls.
Our special thanks to Dr. Randy Wortman for helping us to clarify all this information and try to make sense of some of the really significant problems that children, both boys and girls, can have with eating disorders. Thanks so very much.
Thank you.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our second book, Washington, D.C. with Kids. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573. With your name and mailing address, and tell us what station you're listening to. Since we're airing all over the world, it's always fun to know what station you're tuning in from. Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids are both available at all major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about us and our books, Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids, visit our website, http://i.am/parentsperspective. That's http://i.am/parentsperspective. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.